What's up, ladies and gentlethems, and welcome back to the Shinigami Love Apples podcast, episode 13. I'm Shinigami Ping Ping, joined as always by Shinigami Yuyu, and welcome back after, I would say a week break, but we still released a podcast episode, so there wasn't a break in the, conventional sense of things.
Yeah.
But we didn't have a live stream last week, so that's the one main...
The listeners are mostly none the wiser.
Yes. I like how we're getting RF noise already. Anyway. Actually, it only happens when I...
This was your fault.
It's my teeth. I got a fucking sensor in my teeth or some shit. It's cyberpunk.
It's the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, it's the virus. It's the vaccine.
Yeah.
It causes autism and RF interference.
Oh.
We do not support the spread of disinformation on the podcast. Please don't tell anyone we said that. Well, anyway, how are you doing, Yuyu? I mean, should I just predict that you said it was a shit week, you worked really hard, you covered for everybody else, and...
Except I didn't, because I had the week off.
Right. That's right, which is why we didn't have a live stream last week. Holy shit.
That was good. I had some nice relaxing times, some not so nice and relaxing times. But it was fun overall.
Okay.
I had a good time.
So you didn't go on vacation per se, just more of a like staycation. Really.
Yeah, it was just around here. Yeah. I went from I can't even really say where I went because that's gonna
get doxed. Yep.
I went from one location to the next location.
You went from the house. You went from the house to locations nearby the house.
Yeah.
Enjoyed yourself for the day and returned home.
I will say here's what I'll say. I saw animals.
Ooh.
I also saw bodies of water. The pool specifically.
All right, so we're not in Las Vegas. Oh.
They have pools in Las Vegas.
I went to
the pool a couple times. I played mini golf.
Ooh.
Yeah, I saw various animals. I saw a lake. Most states have lakes, so I could say that.
This is really we could just make an episode just titled "You Use Nondescript Vacation to Nowhere" or to Genericville. That's at this point you're basically describing Springfield from The Simpsons. It's just generic.
That's where I went. Yeah,
generic city USA. My week. Oh boy. I'm gonna rant about this later because we have a nice, healthy spot to talk about this and the things we think are fucking dumb, which I do think is really fucking dumb. Nice.
That doesn't sound good.
You know, it's more like Breaking Bones, that one. Opening. by the way, what we're drinking this week, before I rant about my week, we're drinking the...
I'm out of ambience.
Oh. We're drinking Premium Boss Black this week.
Black?
Yes. Burak. It's literally, I think it's just the same coffee blend as the small cans.
The regular one,
just more and not watered down, which I'm pleased about. I'm happy about having watered down coffee.
Unlike the one that we had a couple weeks ago, which was just artificially flavored coffee
bean water,
that had no caffeine or anything in it. I can't remember how they described it, but it was just it was artificially flavored like coffee.
Coffee like drink. I think it was artificially flavored coffee flavored drink or whatever. Yeah. Anyway,
this one actually, they actually roast real coffee beans in this one, so that's pretty.
Damn! Yeah. Imagine doing that. But no, my week. So, as you all probably remember from the past few episodes, I've been talking about for the past, I don't know, 3-4 months, I've had a company in my industry in what I do, kind of courting me for a potential major. I talk about it like it's some sort of fucking odd job, and it's not. It was a major job opportunity. And they flaked at the last possible minute. And I do mean the last possible minute. I'm talking offer on the table, numbers discussed, hands shaken all around, ready to just go into the HR onboarding process. And by their own admission, or call it whatever you want, by their own claim, the job I would have had got reorged and it went away. So that's cool. I'll rant about it later because there's something specific I want to rant about, but that's the long short of it for now. So, we got nothing to backpedal this week, mostly because last week's episode was pretty flawlessly researched, and no one's written any hate mail yet, so we'll wait to get more. But this week in anime, really, really, I found a really cool sort of hidden gem. It got recommended to me out of the blue. Mm. I think I had seen it on my Crunchyroll recommended once prior.
Yeah.
But it didn't stand out to me for whatever reason. I think it reminded me of something else. But the anime is called Soroyori mo Toi Basho, which is a place further than the universe. Mm. I think the English should translate a place beyond the universe, but okay, yeah, sure.
A place further than the universe.
Close enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the basic anime summary is four girls go to Antarctica. And yeah, kind of on paper, if you read that on paper, you'd be like, this sounds hokey as fuck. There's no way this is entertaining.
Yeah.
And it's weird because
it sounds kind of fun to me.
Well, it's an interesting blend of comedy, drama.
Okay.
Calm drum? Uh-huh. I don't know. It's has really, really good humor, but it has some really hard-hitting moments. Hmm. And that final episode left me literally sobbing. It was very, very, of course, in the break room, which was fucking awkward. But at work, I'm in the break room, yeah, like crying over this episode. And
grown man cries about cartoon and break room.
And a coworker walks in and just looks at me and goes, yeah, and sits down quietly and eats their lunch. I'm like, well, if I didn't already have a reputation before, I definitely have one now.
That's funny.
But it was really, really, really good. It's a surprise hit for me because there's no plans for a sequel. Hmm. There's no plans. I don't even think it was serialized. You know, it's funny. Wait, hold on a minute. I'm going to check something real quick. I think this was due for a Crunchyroll award or an anime award.
Might have been. I remember seeing, I'd seen some like random clips of this, I think. It looks familiar.
Because I swear they didn't win. I don't think they won.
Uh-huh.
But I think they were nominated. Can I just see? Oh, yeah, I can. Okay. I want to say it was nominated for original. I don't know why that's coming to mind. Best new anime series. Anime film. Original anime. No, it's not. I could have sworn. But anyway, it was just flawless. I don't know why, where it came from, or how it creeped up on me, but it was just really, really good.
Nice.
What about you for this week?
well, because of my vacation, I didn't really get to do much of anything this week. But just before I left, you and I started watching Train to the End of the World.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, we get to watch more of that today. Oh, I'm stoked.
Yeah. Which we've only seen the first episode of, and it is. I don't even know how to describe. It is so trippy and weird and fat, super fast.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, even reading the subtitles, I was starting to get lost because they were just, they're talking like, they're talking like this, and I was just like, bro, what are they saying? This is insane. And just everything was just constant moving.
What I love about the first episode we've seen of Train to the End of the World is there is a definitive underlying tone that's really sinister.
Yeah.
I have no clue if they're going to do anything about it, or if it's like
it's
discomforting. Like, you're sitting like,
yeah, it's weird because like it doesn't give me horror vibes, no, but like I feel like you're supposed to be somewhat scared of what's happening,
or at least you're supposed to like be uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of a monster in the dark corner in the room that you can't see, where it's just like, oh, I do love something odd about this.
Yeah, I'm curious. I should have looked this up actually, but I don't know. I don't know if Japan had a similar fear of cell signal as we do in America, but from an American perspective, seeing that the world ends because of 7G is hilarious because there are genuine conservatives here in the States that believe that 5G is killing all of us.
Yeah, when they started expanding the 5G network for Verizon, I remember there being news articles about
burning down the towers and stuff.
Yeah, they were going to actually, a couple people did. Mm-hmm. I know in the Northeast, people were vandalizing the cities sites.
Yeah, the city where you and I lived previously, they burnt one down.
Oh shit! Really? I didn't know that.
when we were in the cabin house.
Oh, of course.
During 2020 and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, the pandemic is here. Time to burn down all the 5G towers. That's
well, because they believed. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's right.
They believed that COVID was spread because of 5G. Anyway, the premise of the show is that 7G is created, and that's what brings on the end of the world. Which is hilarious.
And almost a weird sort of... It didn't destroy the world. Maybe it just...
No, it just... changed it.
Yeah, and then took a turn south somewhere. Yeah. I feel like there's an unexplained gap. It reminds me a lot of Fallout.
Well, I'm curious.
About, but
yeah, I was curious because she pressed the 7G button,
yeah.
got scared, pressed it again, and it stopped, and then they reinitiated it. So I'm wondering if there's like a break because it didn't fully.
Yeah. There's more going on underneath, and I would love to know.
Or a bad guy created it. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to know. And then the hyper speed at which they're moving stops you from having enough time to think on your thoughts and go.
I couldn't think at all. It was just, it was constant go, 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 go.
So, yeah, I'm really excited to continue that. Video games this week. Hey, guess what's not back on the radar? I was going to say, you're going to talk about Genshin in a second. it's back on the radar. Hoyoverse, we are so sorry.
Yeah, we still love you.
We do. Dawei, please love us forever. Amen. Dawei. Bing Qiling and all that, please. Oh. I don't know what I said, but I just know it's a meme.
Ice cream.
Oh, wait, really? Bing Qiling is ice cream?
Yeah.
Wow, what a most eloquent thing I've ever said in another language.
Yeah.
Besides, opai. but a game I found, so I don't know how much our listeners play like indie video games or like startup dev stuff.
Yeah.
I follow a lot of it on Threads just because I really enjoy watching people's journey through game dev. Mm-hmm. But there's a project going on, a UK driven, I believe UK. Actually, don't quote me on it. Their website would say, I think it is though.
Mm-hmm.
A game called Starship Simulator, and it's out on Steam as a demo. It's not even out with a full alpha release yet, and it's very much under construction. But as a massive sci-fi immersion fan, because the thing I dislike about most sci-fi games, so the sci-fi games I've played, right? I've played Star Trek Online. I've played EVE Online. I've played Star Citizen. I've played Elite Dangerous. I've done a ton of different Star Wars Starship games of different types. I've not played Starfield yet, but I imagine it would not be vastly different.
No.
I have played someone else's account on No Man's Sky. So I'm familiar with the sci-fi space exploration, planetary shipbuilding genre in general. And I really, really, really enjoy it. But every single one of them has just this little thing missing. And that's detail.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why. And every game does it differently. So EVE Online compensates by making the game complex. By making it complex, you ignore the fact that certain details are omitted, like certain science isn't explained to you. It's not like Mass Effect where you're being given exact definitions of every little bit of scientific stuff.
Yeah.
But like EVE Online uses complexity to make up for the seeming lack of detail. on the other hand, games like Star Citizen or Elite Dangerous try to be more on the simulator side of things, where the universe itself is a little less, riveting. Like the planets aren't extremely in depth and there's not a lot of crazy politics and shit going on, but the ships are more detailed. The planet surfaces are more detailed. There's more for you to explore, and that side of things is more enjoyable.
Yeah.
But no matter what sci-fi game you play, I feel like they all miss one thing, and that is the sort of the vibe of space exploration. And Starship Simulator nails it because you literally fly what is the equivalent of, it looks like a Star Trek era sort of starship, but it's fully simulated. All the electrical systems, you have to go down to the engineering decks, manually operate the ship piece by piece. And it looks like the developer's ultimate goal is to have 20 to 40 people online manning a single ship and having this sort of expansive universe of people crewing these ships.
Yeah,
and it looks,
I was looking at
incredible.
The website, they have captain, pilot, science officer, tactical officer, engineer, doctor, morale officer, and passengers.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're looking for a full.
Full,
I mean,
crew.
The fact that you have a doctor on board, tells me this is more than just get in ship and fly.
Yeah, exactly. and I love that because the whole point of the immersion, and they took care of the, because they have warp factor and warp speed, obviously you can travel between destinations very quickly. You can go Mars to Earth in a snap of your finger, and that's good because you don't want the player feeling bored. But the same token, I can also fly at, warp 0.5, take 50 minutes to get there, and while I'm doing so, go down to the lounge and grab a bite to eat.
Yeah.
So I can role play way more so than I can in other space games. So super cool, extremely early dev, free, by the way. So if you're looking for a free game to just explore in, that's great. Now, how about you for gaming this week?
What am I doing? Oh, well, I wanted to mention, I'm gonna talk about Genshin first.
Okay.
S- shit. Since we last, I'm trying to think about 2 weeks ago what we
the talked
last
about.
The last
thing we talked about was pre the current banner. We have not talked about the current banner yet.
Okay. So we finished the really fun event, which people have been raving about, the potion one.
Oh, yes.
And
God.
Are begging Hoyoverse to add as
well. Please bring it back. It's so good.
Yeah. That one was incredible. And then there was, I think I talked about the photo taking one. I finished it. It's fine.
I never tried it, but like I'll take your word for it.
There was nothing really special. Even like the questionnaire that they do at the end of all those things, the survey was like, what did you like about this event? And it was, there was basically just like, it was cool to test out, like the options were like, cool to test out new characters, like trial characters.
Oh.
I like to take pictures of them in their action poses. Other. So they knew it. Nice. Yeah, they knew it was just a thin little one-off thing. Fast forwarding now, though, we're at the second half of 4.5, which has Nuvolette and Kazuha, which we both pulled for.
Yep.
You got Nuvolette.
Yep.
I got Jean. I was very upset because I already own 27,000 support. Animo support characters. It's okay. I do have a secret, though.
Ooh.
I do own Nuvolette.
Wait, did you buy him? Yeah. Did you straight up buy him?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Wait, well, I mean, how? I didn't buy him.
In the shop?
No. I just bought more rolls.
Fair
I
enough.
Told you I was gonna spend
how,
money
how
on them.
How many rolls did it take you? Just for the sake of all everyone wondering, it's like, okay, how much? How many?
I don't remember.
Is that like?
No.
Is that like a hangover where you're like, I don't remember because I rolled so
no,
hard.
No, I just wasn't paying attention.
Oh.
I don't know.
Tell me you're in a good financial place. That'll tell me you're in a good financial place. Yeah. You stopped counting rolls after a couple minutes.
My bad. I do okay. Let's say that.
All right.
No, that's fun. I wasn't even going to talk about the banner. What I was going to talk about is the cat mini game.
I've heard it's adorable, but I haven't.
It is very fun. Yeah.
Okay.
It's. So a lot of people have the same sort of opinion as I do. It's not. It's a little boring.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think coming off of the coattails of
the potion shop.
Of the potion shop, this one's not as fun. Because the potion shop was very much like. You manage and whatever you do is what you do. This one is like there's a set solution and there's five or six cats.
Okay.
And once you do it, it's over.
I think too Genshin's developers have the world's worst, most miserable challenge.
Yeah.
Which is two things simultaneously. One, they have to figure out a release schedule for new content.
Mm-hmm.
If they release on every banner, which is when people want them to bring new content, that's very frequent when you think about it. That's every 3 to 5 weeks.
Yeah. When you really think about how much content Genshin pushes out, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So if you're pushing out new content every 5 weeks, you're going to have misses.
Yeah.
If only because at some point you've done it all before and it's just time to start chucking shit at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate. I wish they would have swapped those two things because the cat game is fun.
But being a follow-up to...
Being a follow-up to an incredible event is like, well, it's okay.
Well, and this is... there's room here for Hoyoverse to understand what a hit the potion... And we've talked about this off-stream or off-podcast several times where you could easily integrate the whole potion-making thing into the game as a mechanic, whether by allowing players to consume potions and use them practically, which is completely... reasonable, actually. Yeah. It would give incentive to players to collect plants and stuff. Because once you reach our level, you don't stop cooking, but you probably have a support in your team who can out-tank you past most.
I don't eat food too often.
Yeah, because you've got Benny as support.
Yeah,
I've got a C5 Barbara support. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the last time I've had to cook food for healing, unless Barbara is not on my team, in which case suddenly I do. But like potion, I understand, because I do eat food for attack boosts, defense boosts, and stamina.
Yeah.
So having potions do that gives me another purpose for plants, especially stuff I have a lot of, like mint and sweet flowers and that other shit. So
yeah,
I'd like to see it make more. And what is the other thing you wanted to
mention? The other thing is Rimworld, which you'd kind of talked about 2 weeks ago, but we actually had played a lot of it in between because obviously we didn't talk about it last week because it was the tech episode. But we played Rimworld and it was pretty fun. I will say not a game that I typically would like, but because it was
like co-op.
Co-op.
Yeah.
It made it a lot more fun. Because you dealt with all the dumb shit that I would have quit the game over, and then I did all the fun stuff.
Yeah. And for those of you wondering, because you're going, wait, RimWorld single player? Yes, it's modded. It is a supported mod, though, and it's not a complicated thing at all. All it does is it takes the core game and essentially introduce another cursor to where the other player controls a second mouse and is able to control pawns and issue orders.
Right, yeah.
But what's nice about it is it opens up one thing, one of the biggest flaws in RimWorld. If you're a hardcore RimWorld player, so I will admit I play on Phoebe Chillax, but I play on Permadeath because I like the masochism of that. And I always play on a harder difficulty and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I don't like Randy Random or these crazy psychotic fucking, I'm not a true masochist. I don't want to be punished every 10 seconds for playing the game. But the thing about RimWorld that I really, really love is like that storytelling aspect. But the problem with the storytelling is you have to interrupt it by pausing the game every 2 seconds to monitor your pawns and make sure something doesn't go weird. Because no matter how well you plan, one of your pawns has decided that this is the fucking moment.
Right.
They are not going to do what you requested them to do.
Yeah.
But the nice thing about having co-op is that kind of eliminates that. Because if you have pawn A and pawn B in just a two-pawn game, and we did Naked Brutality, which is the hardest difficulty you can do because you start with literally nothing.
Yeah.
And your environment may or... We did random start, too, so you may or may not even be in a favorable position.
Yeah.
So by having one person controlling each pawn, you're 100% monitoring them around the clock.
Mm-hmm.
So you can catch stuff early on of, ooh, that's going to be a problem. I better change my workload or pathing or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, it made it a lot more fun doing it in co-op. For pop culture this week, we debated over whether to put this with like, it doesn't go with anime for obvious reasons.
Right.
It's like cinema, maybe with video games, and that is Fallout. Now, I understand that because most of our content is in the Asian market, this probably doesn't hit quite with the rest of our content as much. But
yeah.
I don't know, maybe it does. But I was curious
what Fallout's reaches.
Yeah. So the Fallout TV series on Amazon is absolutely fantastic. And I am going to qualify that statement by saying I have been playing Fallout since the original. I have played Fallout 1, 2, the Brotherhood of Steel Tactics, 3, 4, and New Vegas. Now,
yeah.
I've not played 76 because by the time I was willing to get into it, everyone had shat on it so hard, and the modding community had done such a good job on Fallout 4 that I wasn't incentivized to go to 76. I do want to play it, though, especially because it has online, and I think that could be a lot of fun. Like for us, we could do a co-op campaign. And now that it's really stable, it might be fun to do.
Yeah.
Do a co-op playthrough of Fallout 76. Maybe we'll add that to our list of things to do. But
I'd be willing to give it a try.
The Fallout TV series is excellent. And as a hardcore fan, I promise you, outside of the feral frothing mouth neck beards screaming about really minutia, it's excellent. It at every single moment I've had the vibe of this is Fallout, oh yeah, that's a Fallout character, oh that's, and to be fair, a lot of it is fan service. You know, my wife's watching with us and she's finding less to like identify with or associate with because she doesn't play the games. But she's still enjoying it as a TV series. Like, it's not leaving her in the dust. She doesn't feel like things are being completely unexplained. But I have to admit, the fan service does carry it. So if you are an unbiased neutral watching this series as it's just another TV show, I could see a little. You could watch something. You could watch Game of Thrones and at least get more enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
But the same token, too, Fallout is at its core a video game IP. So certain things are going to be slightly wonky anyway, because they've refused to break out of game rules and limitations.
Yeah, I was happy to see that, because the first time a character got injured, I was worried that they were going to do a full-on like doctor thing.
Yeah, and surgery.
But
and
she just picked up a stim pack and then hit herself and she was good. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's exactly. And it's cool because it gives a little bit of validation to the games. Because you get people who play, again, feral, frothing mouth, neckbeards, play the game going, it's not hard enough. Yeah. I need hunger in character. Now, I am one of those nerds that likes survival. I play with disease and hunger and thirst and all that shit. That's great.
Yeah.
But I don't want bullet wounds to be simulated to the point where I have to fucking put every fucking stitch in. I just don't. That level of detail is not requisite. For me, it doesn't add anything.
Yeah.
So I love that, if anything, the Fallout TV series is giving validation to players who play Fallout either on easy, just stick, stim pack, walk away. Yay! Yeah. Even the dog.
Yeah.
The dog, spoilers, I mean, it's not much of a spoiler. It's just dog. But dog gets injured. He stimpacks the dog, and the dog just goes, wink, and just gets up, and we're like, what? That's weird. But it's perfect. And the comedy in it, Fallout has a perfect blend. You know what reminds me of? Shaun of the Dead. Yeah. It's got this perfect blend of comedy, but there's definitely some shit going on underneath. And it just does it does both really, really well. Okay. Onwards to our oldies with moldies section. And I already am going to get flack for this because it's not an oldie. I'm reviewing Trigun Stampede. Now, there is a reason I'm doing this. If you listened to our previous non-special podcast, so not the last one, the one before, episode 11. In episode 11, I reviewed Trigun. And, episode 10, because you did your name on episode 11.
Uh-huh.
The last time I reviewed an anime, it was Trigun. And the original Trigun is fantastic, don't get me wrong. But I'm going to say what's probably going to be a little bit of an unpopular opinion among the weeby folks like myself. And that is, I think Trigun Stampede is better.
Yeah.
Trigun Stampede, and you've had the privilege of seeing it, I think is more accessible.
Yeah.
I think Vash is more relatable. Mm. Less of a doofy sort of...
Yeah.
Less caricatured.
Yeah. Because like, in the original one, like I tried watching the original one, but it was very of its time. It's super tropey 90s kiddie cartoon style.
Yeah, it's kind of... And like I said, that's where he gets his character development from. Because in the 90s, a... character going from being complete goofball to very serious drama was a perfectly normal progression.
Yeah.
But that today you look at that character person and go, this feels a little,
it was a little rough.
Strange. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why would anyone be that way? But right off the bat, there's always this, and I saw someone really eloquently put it on Threads. They said, you can see from episode one, you can see the hurt in Vash's eyes at every single episode.
Yeah.
His smile is always masking something.
Mm.
And because of that, you always get this picture that no matter how goofy or clumsy or otherwise just dorky and unlucky Vash is, there's always something serious going on underneath. So to summarize the series, Trigun Stampede and Trigun as a whole is a sci-fi anime set in a future where a mission, an Earth mission, to save humanity's population, crash lands on a Rimworld planet.
And, Rimworld?
Hey, reference! Yeah. And they crash onto this outer ring planet. A desolate place, no way to survive. And they basically disassemble their ships and their components to survive. And one of the components they salvage is something called a plant. And all a plant is it is a somewhat misunderstood mystical object which essentially crosses dimensions... crosses ethereal planes to retrieve energy, brings it back, distributes that energy. It's essentially, they're glorified power plants, thus plants.
Right.
But they're also plants because they bloom, live, and are organic and eventually die.
Yeah.
And major spoilers coming in about 5 seconds, so close your ears if you're brand new to Trigun. Vash is one of these plants, as is his brother, Knives.
Yeah.
And the whole premise of Trigun is Knives has one wish for humanity, and that is for it to be erased. Because Knives feels that the plants are vastly superior to humanity, which they are, and that they shouldn't have been ever enslaved, which is kind of true.
Yeah.
And the thing about Knives, at every single point, you almost sympathize. Because every time he talks about it, it's like, oh yeah, that's he's kind of right about that.
Yeah.
Like it's like that one meme of that stick figure who holds their hand up and goes, oh.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Like everything Knives talks about, plants are completely enslaved. They're abused. They're underappreciated. The humans use them and throw them away. But at the same token, Vash sees the other side of, well, the only people who can change that are humans, which is true, because they are the ones doing the enslaving. So they need to not enslave them and they need to make those decisions.
Yeah.
And Vash spends this entire season trying to do that. And unfortunately for Vash, whose nickname is the humanoid typhoon or a walking disaster. Unfortunately for Vash, because he's naive and he's innocent, he keeps walking into these situations where the only solution is violence and he doesn't wish to be violent and he gets himself screwed because he just won't. He doesn't understand that push will come to shove. And when it eventually comes to push to shove with Knives, that's even worse because now he has to take violence against someone of his own kind.
Right.
And it's beautiful because Trigun Stampede concludes where most would consider to be a prequel point to the original Trigun. And I believe they're just going to straight remake the original Trigun, which is fantastic. But up to this point, like, it's perfectly executed. Now, Trigun Stampede gets a 9.5 out of 10. I can't do 9.5 on my anime list. So if you ever looked at my list, you wouldn't see that. But it gets a 9 out of 10 for me because Trigun, the music is just...
It's very good.
Fuck me. I really should have looked up the composer before I talked about it, but like the music in this series is absolutely jaw-dropping. Eerie, emotional, just every time I hear the soundtrack, it's iconic and I can tell you where in the anime it was from. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
The animation is crisp as fuck.
This is very nice.
Wow.
It is a little weird at first.
Yeah.
Because uncanny. I don't even know how to describe it. Like,
well, it's like pseudo cel shading.
Well, that's not even what I was talking about.
Oh.
I think aesthetically it looks very great. It looks great, but it's like the FPS is slightly off. They move kind of chunky.
Yeah, the 3D animation is done very smoothly, but they're animated in a slower frame rate as if they were hand drawn, which I think is the vibe.
Right.
I think they're trying
to. I got over it after like episode 3 or 4.
Yeah, but it does take a second.
But that was one of the complaints I think that a lot of people had initially is they were like, it looks weird.
Yeah.
So that is something to think about when you first start into it. I would highly suggest putting up with it for a little bit because you will get used to it and the story is so good.
Yeah, it's excellent. All right. So on to our last non-serious shit section. And this is going to be kind of serious shit. So I'm going to rant for a couple seconds on the things we think are fucking...
Thank you.
That we're going to make a negative thing lighthearted. And the way I'm going to actually quote the way I fucking wrote it in the notes, because I literally said, getting your chain yanked by a company that's not actually hiring.
Yeah.
So I already talked about briefly at the beginning of the podcast that I've been in this 3 to 4 month process. And for those of you working in sort of the introductory or the entry level world, you may not be familiar with this, but the jump from being an hourly worker working kind of your average job of any kind to being a salaried worker is miserable. That leap crushes more people than any other.
Yeah.
And that has been the case for me for the past 5 years. I've been fighting to get into a salaried role. And so I'm trying to get into the salaried job in my business. And I work in the entertainment business, entertainment tech side of things. So I work with lighting, audio, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And this company that's going to hire me is a major player in that world. And so we went through this 4 month process. They had approached me. So this was a recruitment process. There was a definite drive to bring me on board. And the role as they described it, and this wasn't a red flag for me, but the role as they described it was very specific to my niche set of skills,
right,
having an engineering background and entertainment skill set and all this stuff. It was very niche and it was a perfect fit. And at no point did my brain go, well, that's probably too good to be true.
Right.
And it wasn't. At no point was it.
Yeah. But you and I talked about it and I was surprised that that's not the norm.
Yeah.
Considering what exactly you do, the fact that there aren't engineers making sure that certain things are like safe or capable or realistic is like, why isn't that should be a standard.
And specifically we're referring to like in the lighting, audio and video world, not because you obviously have structural engineers working with rigging.
Right.
Yeah, of course a rigging system has to have a structural engineer sign off on it, but no one's pulling a mechanical engineer to look at, or better yet, an electrical or a software engineer to look at a custom proprietary system and make sure it's good. Right. So this company was going to bring me on board for that purpose, and my scope expanded as the job offer made progress. So after the first round of interviews, they realized I had more experience than they were expecting. So they escalated and they went, well, we were considering you for a minor role, but now we realize that you're a better fit for something higher up. So they offered me what most in our industry would call a technical director role, a TD role, working in a position of handling schedules, finance, tasking, delegation, and all that stuff, and kind of handling the communication and organizational aspects of the tech world, which is something I'm very good at. It's what I do at my current job, essentially. And for a significant price hike, you know, or a significant pay hike, I guess, for me, increased benefits, all this stuff. 4 months in this fucking process, and at no point was there even an eye twitch or an eyelash flutter of, this is probably not going to come through.
Right.
So 2 weeks ago, as I mentioned on the podcast, I was given an offer. I was given an offer with numbers and a timeline and a contract, but I wasn't given it on paper yet because it was a created position. It was new to the company. Mm-hmm. They needed to iron out some details. I guess for some, this would be a first red flag, but at the time, it was just like, whatever. They have their own bureaucratic process, and every company is so fucking different in this industry, I can't bother trying to predict their actions. So I let them go. And it was radio silence for an entire fucking week. That was the real red flag. And I went, wow, I'm not important enough to even communicate the application process.
Yeah.
So I got back to them and they're like, we're having some shit. We'll get back to you. They didn't. So then I followed up a second time after 2 weeks of radio silence. And this time I was essentially told, the job that we created the role for you. We put you into the role on the paperwork side. We were ready to send you your onboarding paperwork, your HR paperwork, your W-4 and all that shit. We were ready to start talking biz. And the company we were working for asked us to reorg.
Yeah.
Oh, and by coincidence, your role got reorged.
Yeah.
So now there isn't one for you. And I cannot express my frustration enough. There's a reason this is in the things we think are fucking dumb section and not in just general catch up. This is fucking retarded.
Yeah.
Forgive my French. I know that's really sort of hostile towards autistic people like myself. That's not how I mean that, but I'm going to have to vent a little, and I apologize already for my own words. It's fucking infuriating to go through all of that effort, to spend all that positivity and optimism and drive and enthusiasm and fire and motivation just to fucking drop me at the last hurdle.
Yeah.
And not just drop me after promises were made.
Yeah.
You didn't drop me at an application process or an interview or disqualify. Mm-hmm. You dropped me after you'd already confirmed I got the job in phone calls and emails.
Right.
Could I go to those emails and hold it against the company and go, well, you said, I fucking could. But all they're going to do is flip that back to me and say, well, you didn't get an offer letter. So because of that, of course, I've already gotten some flack from some coworkers at my current job. Like, well, if you didn't get an offer letter, you didn't get the job. All right, motherfuckers. Welcome to the modern world of 2024. Yeah. Not every company is going to give you a fucking legal contract as your offer. Because.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever gotten one.
It just doesn't happen anymore.
No.
The whole boomer concept of a letter of intent. Remember that? LOIs?
Yeah.
The whole letter of intent thing and letter intent to hire. That shit is done. Everything's digitized. They just say yes, no. Flick a switch and onboarding you go. Mm-hmm. I was in the fucking system. I had an email account and everything set up. A login account set up. All this. And then you drop me. And then the worst part for me is, I have to, because of the role I occupy at my current company, be extremely professional and delicate about how I approach what I guess you could call rejection. Mm-hmm. And I had to talk to this person, and not face to face, of course, over a phone call, but like, quote unquote, face to face, look this person in the verbal ears and tell that person, oh, it was wonderful working with you. I wish this could have gone through. No, I fucking don't. Forgive my ranting for a minute. You fucking let it drop. Now that I look at it with perspective, no, I don't want to work with you, because if this is your standard of doing business,
right,
you're clumsy as shit. And I'm not sure I want to be on that end being a perpetrator of more clumsy shit. Yeah. I would just get the job and then want to clean everything up going, man, you guys are bad at this. Let me go start cleaning up your mess.
Right.
Because that's just the engineer in me. But I just, it was, anyway, just things we think are fucking dumb. I'm not going to rant on it anymore because we don't have enough time for that shit. So we're just going to fucking move on anyway. All right. We're going to take a quick break for my ranting ass voice. And we will be back with the serious shit section in just a few moments. We will be right back. All right. So, as always, if you're new to the podcast, this is what we call the serious shit section. And this is kind of where we delve into... I've modified the disclaimer this week.
Yay.
Yeah. This is kind of the section of the podcast where we delve into real-world topics affecting life in Japan and those looking to live and work in Japan who are foreigners. And so these topics tend to be serious, so there's going to be a little bit fewer memes and... I say that... But our first article today is fucking
pretty
joke.
Funny.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. So the article, we get all of our news from the Japan Times and NHK. All of today's articles are from the Japan Times. We do have a subscription, so please do support. good quality news writing. And we've been really grateful. We just got our subscription and it's we're already enjoying it.
Yeah.
The article title is classic. Yeah. 10 million yen. So that's $100,000. Mm-hmm. 10 million yen golden tea bowl stolen from a Tokyo department store at Depato.
Yeah.
So according to the article, this pure golden, oh my God, pure gold. Damn, yeah. It's not even plated. Pure gold tea bowl was stolen from the Takashimaya department store in Tokyo's Nihonbashi district. And the way it was stolen is...
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously you and I are Americans. We petty crime and the whole fucking like...
It's normal.
Steal candy bar thing. We literally went to the mall a week ago or 2 weeks ago and watched someone just walk by one of the centrifuges and just grab and walk away. We're just like, damn, that's...
It's kind of expected here in the U.S. that people are just going to take stuff.
Yeah, so it's not really exotic. I know we don't condone it, but like at the same token, it's like okay, it's America, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the way it was stolen is this: how old was the guy who, or they estimated his?
They said
age
20 to the 20s to 30s.
Okay, so this younger dude, this millennial age dude, walks in, takes a backpack, grabs bowl, puts bowl on backpack, walks away, and just leaves. And the clerk doesn't notice.
Yeah.
Until like hours later.
Right.
So no one like going through the exhibits goes, man, there's a hole in your exhibit. And just walks off with 10 mil.
Yeah.
Now, can we just say that this guy is not that bright? Because you're not going to find a buyer for 10 million.
Right. That was my first question. Whenever I see articles or anything about somebody who steals something extremely specific, what do you do?
How the fuck are you going to offload this? Yeah. This is not fucking GTA.
Yeah.
You're not going to go to your fence down the alley and some dude in a basement goes, I'll give you a couple.
He'd have to go to a different country that isn't going to know about this. But if he sold it in Japan, people would be like, wait a second, isn't this the golden bowl?
And you would still have to write a good line of bullshit.
Yeah.
Because even if you go to another country with it, they're going to want to know why the fuck you want $100,000 for it.
That's like, true. It is so expensive. People are going to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a pawn shop item.
This is not Antiques Roadshow. No one's going in going, I'll give you a grand for that. Yeah. No, dude, it's a fucking pure gold bowl. Yeah. You're like, what the fuck? Anyway, I just thought that was funny. And the reason I think it's funny is just because the note, I'm going to read this exactly because it's so Japanese. Japan, I love you. And again, if you're American or European or just Western in general, this mentality of not being concerned about theft must fuck with you. Like Japanese people, they'll go to a konbini on a cold day and leave their cars running with the keys in ignition and the doors unlocked. And it's just, in the U.S., I can't fathom even leaving the keys in the car, let alone the car on and ready to drive away.
Yeah.
Just, I can't, or not locking my front door. Just, no, I have to. Even though we're in the safest neighborhood we've ever been in, because it's not white. safest neighborhood we've ever been in, and I still lock the door, even though I know these people aren't going to fuck with us. But anyway, the article's phrasing is beautiful. Following the incident, more stringent measures were implemented. Oh, okay, tell me more. Including the placement of partitions to ensure a safe distance between visitors and the remaining merchandise. Not locking it up or chaining it or doing anything to secure it. We put up some plastic sheets.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll bet you they're not even plastic sheets. I'm making assumptions. I'll bet you they're just fucking stanchions.
Right.
With rope.
Yeah.
Just like, please, sir, stand 2 feet back from the gold bowl. Instead of going up to it, you got to stand further back.
Yeah.
That's definitely going to stop that guy from whipping out his backpack, reaching over the rope, putting it back in the bag and just walking off. Anyway, Japan, love you. You're so naive. You're just...
Yeah.
Well, anyway. All right. What do we got next in the news?
What do we have next? The transport.
Yes.
Well, you read more about the transport stuff side of it.
Yes. But let's talk. This is
we're talking about the expo first.
Yeah. Last week we talked about tech in Japan. And if you haven't listened to it, it's a really cool episode because it's one of the first episodes we've ever really done a deep dive into something specific about Japan. In this case, sort of myth busting and like, what's the opposite of myth busting? Legend confirming? I don't know. Anyway, myth busting and plausibility of myth confirming, I guess. Yeah. of Japan's relationship with high tech futurism.
Yeah.
And so this article is a perfect follow up. And it's about the Osaka Expo, which, what is it about?
Shit, I don't know.
Okay, so, not the article, the expo.
Yeah.
No. Okay. The Osaka Expo. I did do a lot of the most of the reading.
Yeah, I didn't really look too much into this. I'm reading it right now.
Okay, so
and we take a week off and the whole podcast just falls apart.
So the Osaka Expo. So it's apparently supposed to be based on the World Expo, which the World Expo, I don't even follow anymore. So somewhere in my like collectibles that I've got, I'm not very nostalgic or sort of, I'm not a hoarder. I don't really collect things much. I'll often be willing to get rid of stuff after a certain amount of time, but I do have a World's Fair is what's called. I have a 1964 New York World's Fair guidebook, and that's the year that Walt Disney debuted Small World and a bunch of other tech. So it's kind of a famous year for the World's Fair.
Yeah.
The World's Fair, I guess, still happens, but just not the way I'm used to, or not used to, the way I've read about in the past, in the, you know, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And things have certainly changed on the whole, like, world coming together to display science front, because we're less trusting of each other than we've ever been. But the Japan, so this expo, I almost call it Japan Expo, sorry, the Osaka Expo is apparently a tech expo. And it's a place where they're expecting anywhere between 20 to 50 nations and a mix of non-government organizations, private companies, nonprofits, and everything to kind of gather and show off Japan's tech futurism. And some of it is horribly cliche and some of it's incredibly actually forward thinking. So their goals, you know, they list the goals. They say no poverty, ending hunger, good health and well-being, quality education, gender equality, which is an excellent goal, clean water and sanitation, affordable clean energy, decent work and economic growth, industry innovation, infrastructure, so reduced inequalities, so on and so forth. The goals are outstanding, and it's a really cool-looking event. And essentially, they're just going to hold all these different pavilions from all these different nations and organizations, bring them together, and they're going to assign them these objectives that I just read and say, okay, how would you accomplish these things? And they're supposed to show Japan or how do I put this? The vendors are supposed to kind of discuss how these issues can solve Japan's problems. Cause Japan, like in our last episode, we talked about has clean energy problems, has a bad relationship with using robotics for practical purposes. And they're slowly getting better. Japan has a bad relationship with computers and actually digitizing their everyday lives.
Yeah.
So the expo is kind of intended to address this. Well, the article specifically from the Japan Times, ironically, brings up a technological problem for a technological event. And that is getting people to the damn event.
Yeah.
So the article in the Japan Times is transport becomes most pressing issue 1 year out from the Osaka Expo. And essentially, the Osaka Expo is being held on this little man-made island out to the west of Osaka. And I had it earlier. Let me see if I can find the name. The island itself is actually named. Let's see if I can find it. But essentially, it's on this, where is it? Osaka Kansai. Of course, I guess I can control F and see if it shows up, or command F it. Of course, it's not in this page that I'm on. Anyway, it takes place in this little man-made island on the west, just to the west coast of Osaka. And they've built this giant ring. And inside this ring, which is a completely sustainable, self-powered, solar, all that, sustainable energy, wind, and everything. And inside the ring, like internal within the ring itself, are all of these indoor expos and exhibitors running, you know, household technologies and fragile science, that sort of thing. And then the outdoor vendors are doing, you know, industrial technology, automotive, healthcare, and all this other stuff. And the thing is because this is a man-made island, there is a limited amount of transportation in and out of the island. Right now, there's no rail access whatsoever, which in Japan is kind of that's a big deal. To say you don't have rail access, you might as well be in the fucking boonies. Because even the boonies have rail in Japan. You can get to the
Well, especially the if this is on an island, like, it's not too many ways to get to an island.
No. Well, that's the thing. So right now, they don't really have ferry service. They don't really have rail service. But they have inbound access roads. But the problem is Osaka, especially urban Osaka, has the same problem that urban Tokyo and urban Kyoto have. And that is explosive growth. So a lot of the coast in Japan, for those of you unfamiliar with Japan's terrain, is reclaimed land. Japan tends to take, the Japanese government tends to take just off their coast areas, like small atolls and really small sandy shoals, and turn them into proper islands and firm up their foundations and build on them. In fact, the Olympic complex for the 2021 Olympics, all of their housing for the athletes was built on reclaimed land. Narita Airport, Haneda, Haneda Airport is built on reclaimed land. So this is the exact same. So usually Japan builds up this island, they'll put facilities to get to it, and they'll turn it into usually industrial, industrial and commercial stuff. This island has already existed, and it's got a cargo terminal on it. But therein's your problem. Almost all the traffic coming in and out of this island is heavy truck traffic. And you wouldn't call heavy truck traffic to ports very fast.
No.
Or maneuverable.
Yeah.
And now you want to bring in a shit ton of taxis, Ubers, rideshares, and some personal vehicles.
Yeah.
They're expecting 150,000 visitors a day.
Right.
Jesus Christ. That's
well, they're also... this is something that you and I were talking about pre-recording, is that they're expecting like full-on presidents and ambassadors and like clergymen and stuff, like top of the top from every country to come here. I don't imagine presidents and kings and things
taking
are
going to
an Uber or public transportation or whatever. They're going to want to like fly in and have a personal car and helicopter straight onto the thing, probably. Like
So it's interesting because, you know, they're worried about whether or not the site will be able to support the expo by the time it opens. Now Japan's turnaround time on infrastructure is laughably fast. Like in here in the U.S. we can actually use the construction outside the restaurant we went to today. There's this one restaurant we go to and there is this section of road leading into this strip mall section. It has been under construction for what now, like a couple weeks, a couple weeks longer, though, because it's been...
Oh, sorry. When I say couple, I don't mean two. I mean
like
three or more.
It's been like a couple months almost.
Yeah.
And it gets bigger. It's getting worse and worse.
Originally, they just blocked it off, and they weren't doing anything. So people just moved all the cones and stuff. And then they started working on it a little bit, but it was still just some cones, and people just drove around the little piece that was being worked on. Now they have it like... damn near the whole entire fucking road is just completely shut off.
Yep.
At this point, it's not just the entrance that they're working on. It's the whole thing.
And the work they've accomplished in a month is they've torn up a couple slabs of concrete. I think that's really it.
Yeah.
Japan's not like that. Whenever I watched this live stream of the Shinjuku station and the surrounding area of Japan's metro rail system, both Shinkansen and local rail. And they do nightly sort of improvement projects on the rail. They're done by morning. Now, granted, this is a small section, you know, maybe a couple kilometers long. They're not working on more than that. But they can get a couple kilometers of fucking rail done in a night. That does not happen here in the U.S.
No, we have this weird thing where, like, especially with like road work and stuff, where we will we'll work on maybe 3 feet worth of stuff. But we'll set up for it 6 months in advance. We'll block off 7.5 miles worth of road. And then they'll dig up that, like, couple feet that they're supposed to dig up. And then they'll move on miles down the road, dig something else up.
Well, leaving the previous blocked off still.
It's all still blocked off, so hole in the ground. And then they'll be like, oh shit, we need to like fix that. So then they'll go back there, but they'll realize something's wrong, or maybe some there's new some new standards and stuff. So they'll repatch all of it, and then they'll go back to the guy who draws all the plans, and then they'll go back and tear that same three feet up again, and then they'll refill it, and then they'll do this, that, and you know, this whole back and forth thing. And yeah, our simple projects take years around here.
So Japan is both in a hole, but not, or Osaka specifically is both in a hole and not in a hole, because their transportation turnaround time logistically is enormously short. So they can easily get, actually they estimate that the rail system will be completed by the end of year, before the expo even opens. No problem, because it opens in April next year. So April 15th, in fact. So, you know, they really expect this to be done by then easily, because by the end of year, rail will be established, roads will be improved, and they'll have ferry service.
Yeah.
But at the same token, they're not really worried about having the systems as much as their capacity.
Yeah.
Because the thing about Japan's rail system is Japan's rail system is so reliable, it becomes overwhelmed. I wouldn't even say it's overwhelmed, because they still manage to push everybody through.
Yeah.
It just becomes busy, excessively busy to an American or a Brit or anyone else who has mass transit in their country. We're used to stuff being packed, sure, but not like, not the way Japan packs subway cars and trains. Yeah. These are full fucking trains.
Yeah.
150,000 a day off and on a single site, single line rail. Ooh, that's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. They do expect it to be finished. And to be fair, they say the buildings on the site will be completed by July of this year, which, wow, that is ambitious, because they've already just broken ground. It's like, again, it's just 3 month turnaround. They're like, yeah, we'll have the expo buildings done in 3 months. What the fuck? They'd be done in 3 years here.
Yeah.
Jesus. And then hopefully they'll have the rail system done by the end of the year, which sure. Even then, Osaka officials have admitted that they are kind of behind the eight ball on finding a way to handle the traffic.
Yeah.
So, and Japan's not used to what we're used to. Like, we kind of accept that if anything happens to the roads down past our house, we're fucked.
Yeah.
It's just, you leave the house in the morning and you go, it's going to be one of those commutes.
Yep.
you just look at it and you go, yep.
Yep.
15 minutes? Nah. Hour. Easily. Yeah. Just, and I literally leave an hour before my shift, and I still end up sometimes just scraping for a 15-minute journey.
Yeah.
That became an hour because, yay, tourists.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. So, we'll see if they manage to finish it on time or not. But yeah.
I have a feeling, though, because it is such a big and important thing, and the last one they did was in 2005.
Yeah, that's,
and they're bringing it back, and they're making a big deal about it. I have a feeling they'll put in some extra man hours or money or something just to get it.
And you know, just to kind of hop off the article for two more minutes, but, you know, before the end of the podcast, talking about the expo specifically, we were talking pre-podcast about how cool this is that I had never even heard of it.
Yeah.
And just looking at it, it's absolutely insane. Like, so if I go to the purpose here, I think it was either purpose or the master plan. They had kind of
purpose.
It was a purpose that has the folks on it. Which one has the... there's a page that has the
people?
Yeah. Was it the master plan or...
That's probably under the producers.
Right. Let's take a look. Because there's... they listed all these different industries. It's not that one.
Industries were on purpose.
Oh, was it? Oh, no. It's here. It's master plan. Okay. So the following thematic projects are being run at the expo. One is biology in terms to the humankind system of life, which is an interesting turn of phrase, but biology. Mm-hmm. Then you have an animation director and mechanics designer working with between creating meaningful connections between all forms of life in space, seas, and on Earth. Okay, interesting. Filmmakers working on the objective of reducing division due to crises. Which is really interesting, because if you think Japan's past with crises in just the last 20 years, Japan's had a pretty rough time of that. So that's an interesting ambition. Then we've got, I tabbed to the wrong page, so I just lost it. There it is. Then we have a broadcast writer working on examining the value of eating as a link between nature and culture and between people and gratitude. That's interesting. A professor of, actually doesn't say, it just says Ishiguro Laboratories, expanding functions and capabilities of humans. Yes. Transhumanism. Yeah, baby. If you guys want to talk transhumanism, check out our last podcast episode where we talked about the Don Cafe. Sick. Oh, I want to talk about it again, but it's
Don,
like, no.
And how.
Yeah. Then we have a musician and mathematician and STEAM educator. Yes. STEAM. Someone who understands the arts are part of science. Fuck yeah. Creating a place for co-creation, enhancing life through play, learning, sports, and art. Yes. Media artist working with natural and artificial works and the physical and the virtual to explore all forms of art. And then it just says professor of a university, KO University, working with the uniqueness of each individual life and working with individualism and diversity, which is also really cool because, again, we've talked a ton of times about Japan's struggles with homogeneity and sort of excessive unity, maybe.
Yeah.
A little bit too much collectivism where they probably should open up more to ideas.
Right.
So hopefully that'll be encouraged as well. But yeah, it's a really cool looking event. And if, you can check it out. expo2025.or.jp is the website. And you can do /EN if you want the English version.
Mm-hmm.
But just, yeah, really cool. And I don't think they're going to have issues getting transportation handled before the event.
Yeah.
It's Japan. They've got their ducks in a row. Anyway, that's going to have to conclude it for this week's podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, or if you'd like to write in some fan mail or hate mail, because that's just what you like to do, you can do so at shinigamiloveapples.podcast@gmail.com, and we'll do our best to get back to you or feature it on the podcast. Also, please do check us out on Threads, Shinigami Love Apples, there. That's where we do most of our social media posting, posting and shit posting.
Yeah.
I post,
you post.
Yeah. we have all forms. I mean, I got my moments too. We have all forms. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Shinigami Love Apples podcast. I was Shinigami Pin Pin. That was Shinigami Yu Yu, and we will see you next week.